And actually, it was very good weather, I see. And maybe it's still holding out. I haven't had a look outside. Other than that, of course, those of you with school children will be happy to learn they're back at school, I'm sure. And so we can get on with our work here. And we have a couple of apologies. I have an official, meaning a written apology from the Honourable Esterhazen, who's attending Energy but will come in later. We then have a written apology from the Honourable Williams, who is not well. He's actually quite ill. And then we also have one from the Honourable Mkongi, who's not well. And so we have got these two written not well apologies, one attending a committee. And I'm just looking at yourself, Mr. Hermans has gone, Mr. Medima, with respect to Advocate Alberts, I was under the impression that he was putting in an apology for today. So if you don't get anything by 10 o'clock, then unfortunately he'll be absent. So you may wish to ask Mr. Whittington to try and deal with that. The same goes for the Honourable Shivambu, who's also a full member. I thought PAP was meeting at the moment, but we haven't got an apology. Can you just attend to that, Mr. Whittington? Thank you. Other than that, we have the DDG, Mr. MacDonald Nyetsi Tenzi, Mr. Kumkani Sipa Mandla, Director of the CCRD, the CEO of the National Credit Regulator, that's Ms. Nomsa Motshigari, thank you very much, and Advocate Tungwani, Deputy CEO. Right, now there seem to be a lot more people here than I've been saying, so I see Mr. Lasiba Mashapa, the NCR Company Secretary, Ms. Diane Taff-Blanche, right, thank you, the NCT Chairperson, National, is it Tribunal, that one, yes, that's it, Ms. Marlies Bosch, also NCT, Chief Operating Officer. Right, and then later on this morning we will be looking briefly at the BRRR, Mr. Lucky James. Ah, right, and Ms. Rashmi Pillay. Right, and of course the Parliamentary Liaison Officer, Ms. Naidu. I see Ms. Rashmi Pillay, I'm told, Director Office of the Director General. Is that right? Oh, I see. Right, okay. And with us here, we have our senior researcher, Ms. Madalani, and the committee secretary, Mr. Medima. Thank you. Yes. We did. I'm sure I mentioned Mr. Williams, didn't I? Yes, been ill. And then can we then have someone to adopt the agenda, please? Thanks, Honourable Muntash, seconded by the Honourable Quirinoff. Yeah. And engagement now with the National Credit Regulator with respect to debt forgiveness. Now, as you know, those of you who were here on Friday, we have already in principle raised this issue and taken a decision about a committee bill, but we have asked Mr. Hermans to ensure that an advocate is with us. Advocate van der Merwe would normally be here, but she has sent Advocate Michael Prince, who is here from the same office. Thank you very much. So, fine. Okay, so it's over to yourself, DDG, and of course the CEO, you and your team. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, our team from the DTI and the agencies, Nomsa Siahari and Terrell Blanche.
I'm sorry, DDG, I know you're quieter person than I am, but you'll need to speak into the mic.
Okay, thanks. No, thanks, Chairperson. the presentation here is a sequel of previous engagement on debt relief. But we had made a presentation from the premise that there are other issues, technical amendments that may follow, but the main issue is the debt relief or debt forgiveness. I will use debt forgiveness, debt relief interchangeably, but these issues are so intertwined. And then we are saying there are other issues that may assist in alleviating the over indebtedness that our population is suffering from. That was by way of introduction, and then the introduction goes back after the issue of amending the National Credit Act in 2013 and the regulations. I know Honorable Lewis may say, where's the credit life insurance? It is also given there that we are on the verge of getting approval from the Minister of Finance. Our apologies. That was by way of introduction. And then the other issue was to say there are technical amendments that we want, and then these amendments may also assist the issue of debt relief. So I'm zooming into the area.
The secretary tells me it's still too quiet for them to pick up at the back.
Oh, okay.
Right. And what were you suggesting? I don't know. I think it'll go up.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Yeah, okay. So we are saying there are issues of debt relief that is being brought here because of the National Credit Act, and therefore the National Credit Act is the act that is here to take away or to lessen the issue of over-indebtedness. And therefore, if we single out this legislation, we have to go through the bill. The bill should be under the auspices of amending this legislation. And therefore, it can't be a money bill. It can't be a money bill, because it is amending the Credit Act. So I'm just clearing it so that we should be talking the same language, or we should be saying if it is a money bill, it is under the Minister of Finance. But I know that this is a parliamentary process. So we are saying challenge number one, the NCR is not empowered in terms of the National Credit Act to impose fines after completion of their investigations. So we are requesting that they be given more powers in order to impose fines. There is also the issue of technical amendments that we are saying the NCT is taking all cases, is taking all cases for affordability assessment, reckless lending, and then therefore the Desai judgment recently appreciated what the NCT is doing, because everybody is rushing to the NCT for reckless lending generally, or go to court. But the magistracy, they do not have judicial supervision as for now. They don't have a criteria like affordability assessment. So what we are saying is that it's better for us to have certain amendments in terms of the Credit Act, and then the Department of Justice needs to amend its legislation. They call it the courts, what is it, the Supreme Court's Laws Amendment Bill of 2016 in order to assist in that regard. I'm rushing to the issue of debt relief. It will be better for us to agree on what is it that we mean by debt relief. In the bill, that is a challenge six. In the bill, we need to define what is debt relief, and then what is debt relief measures, what is debt forgiveness. In the Act as for now, there is no empowering section in the National Credit Act for the minister to prescribe debt relief for categories of persons or sector of the economy or community during hard economic conditions. There is no empowering section. Members may recall that previously there was what we call removal of adverse of information, adverse information, and then we used to call it amnesty, but cabinet said no, let us not call it amnesty. Let me refer it to amnesty. That was an indication that we don't have an empowering section of prescribing what is, say, something that may alleviate information, prejudicial information on people. So here we are coming again with the issue of hard economic conditions. If they are there, can we really ask the minister to do anything? In the absence of amending the act, there is nothing that the minister can do. Therefore, we need an empowering section. And then we say the previous processes resorted to regarding the removal of adverse credit information is not the same as prescription of the minister through regulation to provide for debt relief or forgiveness. So the solution, there is a need to amend the act. The criteria for this process should be informed by the prevailing economic conditions in the country. In other words, Parliament has to agree what are the prevailing economic conditions that should lead us to come with a criteria in this regard. The minister should be given power to prescribe debt relief through regulations. The circumstances to be considered under such regulation may include, but not limited to, prevailing economic circumstances in the country or sector or a community. So, in this area, we are saying there should be a criteria agreed upon and then consulted upon with the public. And then immediately a question that comes in is to say, should we resort to debt writing off? Debt writing off means that I write off your debt. However, it doesn't mean that the writing off takes you off from being sued at a later stage. If your circumstances become good at a later stage, it means that I can follow up. The question is how now to talk to this issue of debt relief read together with the writing off. Can we have, for the purposes of this bill, or this expedition, come with a definition that says writing off for the purposes of this bill should mean that we are no longer going to follow up. In other words, writing off should extinguish the debt. Can we do that in terms of this environment, the constitutional environment that we are in? Are we allowed to say for the purposes of this act, writing off shall mean a total extinguishing of the debt? Can we do that? These are the issues that we need to do, because the people we are dealing with, the categories we are dealing with, will no longer become sort of self-sustainable in an area of servicing the debt.
Sorry, Chair, this page is not in our presentation.
As a matter of fact, I have just seen that myself. However, it would appear as if some of us have got the right one. I don't. I don't have the right. And where's the black and white? Just a minute. Have you got the right one? No, none of us.
Sorry, Honourable Chair, I think challenge 7 and 8 are in, they've made separate slides for those. Sorry, and they will be distributed, I understand, after the meeting.
Members, you heard what I've just received here. I think, you know, in the interests of time, let's move, shall we? I'm looking at members. We will be getting these two pages. All right, thank you.
Okay, thanks. So in other words, we talk about slide 7 to say it's talking about writing off that leads, that is not leading to the debt being revived. The question is, in the bill, can we say for the purposes of this bill, we have to have an extinction of debt, in so much that the credit provider will not make a follow-up, but there should be a criteria. Example is, if I'm owing, say, 100 rand, for example, owing 100 rand, and I've already settled 90 rand. Now, circumstances change from my side as a debtor, I'm left with 10 rand. Are you going to wipe out the debt of 10 rand with no right of following up? But that should not be the case, probably, in the criteria where I have paid 10 rand and I'm still owing 90 rand. Should I request that the 90 rand should be wiped out totally? I'm giving these two scenarios in so much that when we deal with the criteria, consulting with stakeholders, we should be able to be honest and say, really, circumstances have changed, but look, you have 95% paid off. Now, I'm saying, 5 rand, please wipe it out. I'm just clearing myself. The two are contradicting in law. So if I may go out of this issue of debt writing off and then the debt relief, the other issue is resale of repossessed property without compensation to the consumer. In simple terms, I have a vehicle, bought it, and then, but I'm still paying an installment, and then you find that somewhere it is repossessed because I was not paying, and then I was owing, say, 100 rand again. When they repossess it, they go and resell it, and then they sell it by, say, 100, 200. 200 rand. I'm owing 100 rand, but they sell it after repossession 200 rand. I'm saying, why can't I be compensated and be given the 100 rand, and they take the 100 rand? That's what we are saying here. The other issue is to challenge number 9, declaration of credit agreements reckless and unlawful by the NCR. We are requesting that the NCR does not have the power.
DDG. Members, as you can probably see, what is listed here as challenge 9 is, and that is the correct one, what you're seeing overhead. On the documents that were handed out, it's page 24, challenge 7. Do you all see that? All right. Let's attempt to follow this. I will ask Mr. Hermans if he can ensure that Mr. Whittington is printing the correct document. It's very difficult to follow this as chair, and to try and chair this meeting and not have the correct documents. Thank you. Right, do go ahead, Mr. DDG.
No, thanks. Thanks for that. And then we were on the issue of declaration of credit agreements, reckless and unlawful by the NCR. The problem is that the NCR does not have the power to declare credit agreements, including pawn transactions, as reckless and unlawful. The solution is that the NCA should be amended to give powers to the NCR to declare credit agreements, including pawn transactions, as reckless and unlawful. Challenge 10, delinquency of directors in terms of the NCA. Here, we are saying the issue of the Credit Act should also be read together with other legislation. Reckless lending should be an issue, it should be an issue that it is not good corporate governance. It's an issue, governance issue. So now that it is a governance issue, but you find that a company is repetitively doing the same thing, and the shareholders are not saying anything, but they are profiting. They are profiting, and therefore we are saying, as a habitual transgressor of the NCA, why can't we apply to the court and declare the directors in the management, to be a delinquent directors? The delinquent director, in terms of the Companies Act, it is a very deterrent issue. The Competition Act, we came here 5 years ago or so with the Competition Act. We also amended it in order to have what we call liability, civil liability, for people or directors who come to a meeting and took a decision to go for price fixing. Let's say it's price fixing. Say, is it collusion, something of that sort? But let me call it price fixing. Then after participating in the price fixing, and then you don't protest to say, I'm the minority director who is not for this decision. You don't say so. And therefore, at a later stage, we find that there is an investigation by the Competition Commission, and it defines that you were part and parcel of something that was wrong in terms of the Competition Commission. Therefore, you should be held liable, personally liable. Now the regulations are in force, and then I think that's what the Department of Economic Development, together with the Competition, are enforcing that act. So we are saying, even in this area, the Credit Act being transgressed, of course, compliance notices having been given, but the person is not taking corrective measures, and therefore we are saying you should be dealt with under the Companies Act, Delinquents Director, and then also maybe we can go to the competition legislation and deal with that issue of civil liability, as an example. So that is personal liability. We have already covered it on the next slide. And then there is the issue of NAFSAS. We are not talking about controversial issues. We are just saying the NAFSAS issue is the issue where you find that the fund, as for now, is not sustainable because people who completed their studies are not repaying back. We are talking about that issue to say, since there is no repayment, whereas people have benefited from that scheme, the Credit Act can be of assistance in the scheme as it stands now. So therefore, a person should not, NAFSAS should not sue for 75%. Is it 75%? In other words, I should say, here's my salary, and then you can deduct, but take not more than 75%. In 100 rand, don't take 75 rand, take 25 rand, and then so that I can repay, and then the scheme become sustainable. I think that's all what we are saying. So the technical amendments, I don't want to bore the committee about them, but there are many. The UIF, where can we get money in order to assist certain classes? We talk about the issue of the UIF may have a lot of surpluses, maybe say 10 billion to 90 billion. Can we use that funds in order to relieve people who are so overly indebted? So these are the issues that we're talking about. The other issue is the Department of Justice is amending its legislation, but recently there is a case on garnishee orders. Garnishee orders is emolument attachment orders that have been declared invalid after the Stellenbosch case. So the Stellenbosch case went to the Constitutional Court, it was confirmed, but we're saying there is a problem that the Department of Justice, whilst it is amending its legislation, the DTI not amending its legislation, the Social Development not amending its legislation to be in line, and the Public Service and Administration, as a government, we need to move to one direction. That is on page 35. So the other issue is the tariffs. You find that there is a Debtors Collection Act, Debtors Collectors Act of the Department of Justice. There is a percentage of tariffs to say is 10%, and then but you may find that if it is being handled by attorneys, the attorneys are using the different tariff. That may be 19, I may be exaggerating, 19 or 20% tariff. But if you were under the scheme of the Debtors Collectors Act, you were going to use a tariff of 10%, 10. But now, because you are an attorney on the Credit Act, you use a different tariff. And that issue is going to burden the debtor for a long time. So therefore we are saying it will be better to play under the regime of the Department of Justice. So generally I think these are the issues that we are coming with on the debt relief, and then shareholder activism in the recommendations is just an example of saying the shareholders are enjoying the dividends, but in terms of the Companies Act, we also have what we call shareholder activism, where the shareholders should also demand that we are not happy that our company is getting profits based on wrongful issues under the Credit Act. The other issue that we need to talk about is settlement agreements, that the NCR should be given power to negotiate if they are investigating, say, on reckless lending, and then if they weigh the options that this option is good for the consumer, there will be refunds and the like instead of going to court tribunal for a long time. It will be better to settle, and then the consumer is benefiting. That should be done, but there should be a criteria. So from my side, Chairperson, through you, I don't know whether the Chairperson should allow Ms. Mutsihari to add here and there. Mutsihari.
Thank you very much, DDG. I'll just check and see whether the CEO, Ms. Mutsihari, you wanted to add anything at this point.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. It is just one point that I wanted to, make the committee aware of, and this is around the fact that, you know, we talk about debt forgiveness, debt relief, and we need to understand that we've got, as at end of June 2016, 24 million credit active consumers. And 40% of these consumers, or 9.6 million of these consumers, are stretched. These are consumers who are we consider or classify as impaired consumers, which means that they have they have accounts that are 3 and more in arrears, they have judgments and adverse listings. So the picture is not looking good. We all understand where our economy is. What the status of our economy is at the moment, and the predictions are also not good, you know, for the following year. So let's just understand that, you know, our consumers are really stretched as we sit here, and we need to find ways of relieving those that are deserving, you know, so that they are able to get back into the mainstream economy, because we all understand that credit is very important for this economy to grow, as long as it's extended responsibly. Thank you.
So, thank you. Well, look, members, we've received this presentation from the Department of Trade and Industry, the DDG, Mr. McDonald, Mr. Nyatsi Tenzi, and also just a couple of points, extra points made by the National Credit Regulator, Ms. Mutsihari. Now, it does appear as if initially you did not get the correct presentation, and I think the Secretariat are aware of that, and they've now addressed everyone's presentation, I hope, at this point in time. That being the case, I'm going to go to members here who've had this. Some of you will recall we have had this for some time during the year, where we in fact got a full presentation, I think it was in May, before we stood up from this committee. But let me not belabor the point and ask members to allow us to do two rounds of this, so that you shouldn't feel you have to put everything into one breath. Let's try you on the 3 minutes per person, strictly as we move on, and then go to the next round or follow-ups. I saw Honourable Hill Lewis, your hand. I saw the Honourable Elberts, the Honourable Kurnoff, the Honourable McPherson, and the Honourable Muntash. Thank you. In that order, Honourable Hill Lewis.
Look, I must say I am quite concerned by what I've heard today, and I want to be quite honest about it, because it really strikes me as very, very dangerous language that's being used. But I don't want to overreact, which is why I want to just interrogate exactly what you mean by deserving customers, deserving citizens and residents who qualify for debt forgiveness. Because we also cannot... I mean, I would think that this goes without saying for the National Credit Regulator, but we cannot foster a culture in South Africa where people do not take responsibility for the debt that they sign themselves up for. It's impossible for us to have a situation where people feel that they can take on more debt than they can handle because they know that at some point the government will just write it off for them. Under those circumstances, no company will ever offer credit, because they can make no prediction as to whether they will ever get their money or not, or what their loss will be, what their impairment will be. It's impossible to plan a business on that basis. So obviously, debt forgiveness cannot mean that. So I want to understand exactly what it is that you mean, because the language is extremely important here. If this presentation gets out there into the public, and you've got 24 million people who think, ooh, this is great, next week the government's going to write off all my debt, then they're going to all go and buy new cars on credit, and we'll be in a much worse position. So I think we must be a lot more specific when we talk about debt forgiveness, exactly who we are talking about, because it cannot possibly be for all consumers, and it cannot possibly, just because you've got an impaired account, that you qualify for forgiveness. Second thing to say is, remember that every single person who is employed and who has a credit agreement should be covered against loss of income by their credit life policy. They should be covered against involuntary retrenchment, and they should be covered against disability. And so if they are impaired, it is most likely because they are a victim of reckless credit that has been given to them, or they have lied about their financial means and they have engaged in too much credit, more credit than they can handle. Now, if they lose their income you make reference to difficult economic times, if they become unemployed, they are covered. Those debts should be written off by their credit life agreements. So we also can't be talking about them. So I need to understand who exactly we are talking about here. I imagine it would be a very, very small group of consumers who, through no fault of their own, either were not covered by credit life insurance or who were sold a bogus credit life policy, and there the NCR should have powers to intervene. But we don't want to end up in a situation where you make the entire debt counselling and debt rearrangement process obsolete, because that process was designed to help people out of situations where they had more debt than they could handle in a way that was systematic and orderly and made sure that the credit providers received a portion of what was owed to them and that there was some relief offered to the client. Now, if we make that system obsolete, because we simply say you're in trouble, it's going to be written off, then what was the point of that system in the first place? So my very specific question is, please, let's be very careful about the language that we use. It could be extremely damaging. And secondly, can you tell us exactly, paint a picture for us of the consumer that you envisage being assisted by this process, because it cannot be every consumer.
Thank you, Honourable Hill Lewis. Let's try and stick to 3 minutes and not four. Honourable Alberts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I agree with the notion that the National Credit National Consumer Tribunal is actually not functioning properly at the moment due to technicalities. large companies get away with murder, so to speak, because they raise technical problems. The NCT has also been in a dereliction of its own duties because it changed its rules without informing the National Consumer Commission. So when they made applications to the NCT with regards to the Holiday Clubs matter, it was merely dismissed because they did not comply. But nobody told them that the rules have changed suddenly, and the rules doesn't make sense. The rules are upside down versions of civil procedure in our courts. So they need to be looked at very quickly, because as far as I'm concerned, the NCT is a non-functional entity at the moment. It doesn't help anybody. It actually, all it does is to protect the big role players who abuse the consumers. So there's some changes that must be made very quickly. But I wanted to ask you what you envisage the form must, procedure the NCT will then take up as opposed to the one that they have in existence. Then also would like to know what is the status of the life credit regulations, and what will be the sliding scale, if it's going to be a sliding scale. And then thirdly, I want to know, I agree with my colleague next to me, Honourable Ronnie Lewis, regarding the debt write-off. We already have the Prescription Act, where debts cannot be chased after 3 years. I assume then that there will be a government intervention by the minister, even before the 3 years have passed, to help people out. So can you kindly explain what the relationship will be between the Prescription Act, as it is for a three-year debt prescription, and when the minister will intervene before the 3 years have passed to save people from debt collectors of some sort. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Albert. Honourable Colonel.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. You know, I've heard what Honourable Hugh Lewis said, but you know, the problem in this country is that we have fostered the culture we have to stop reckless lending. And, you know, obviously we cannot foster a culture where you can take credit and then think it will be written off. That, you know, I agree with him. But the point is that we have reckless lenders out there giving credit to innocent South Africans who do never read the fine print, and that brings us to the problem that we have 1.6 trillion credit in South Africa, increasing 2.3% year on year, and that is a alarming problem. Now, debt forgiveness must kick in against those who are in the business of reckless lending. So I think that is what we should target, to get those guys out of business that have just provided credit to innocent South Africans. Obviously, there are times that you are in a position to engage credit, and you know you can be in a position to pay it off, but your circumstances can change suddenly. And if there was not, you know, what then? What's happening to those people? There we will see repossession sales, where you sell an asset, you know, for the first buyer will come at an auction, and the debt is not written off afterwards. So there must be co-responsibility between the banks who give the bonds, if it's a house, or the banks who gives the credit to buy a motor car, that they make also sure that that asset will be auctioned at a good price, not at the first come and just take the money and run, and then you have the problem. So there's many issues to this. I've also seen that there were some amendments drafted. Maybe there must be some other time that we can look at that. But you know, if we're not happy as a committee, Chairperson, I think this issue must come to us, where we will say, okay, if we're not happy, let the committee take charge and, you know, start drafting to assist South Africans in stress.
Thank you, Honourable Kernoff. just to point out, that's indeed why they're here, because you'll remember on Friday, you were here, or it was Thursday, I think, that we finally met, where we said in principle we would be doing this committee bill, but that's why we've called them in, per se, to formalise this. But thank you very much. You raised some very interesting points on that auction lot. Honourable MacPherson?
Thanks, Chair. I'm a bit sort of stunned at this presentation, because I'd like to know what engagement you've taken with credit lenders, banks, and what their view is of this. Because, you know, to put something like this on the table in a committee like this that's open to the public, as the Honourable Hugh Lewis said, has the potential to be very, very dangerous. One, for, you know, as he had said, for consumers to go and, you know, start spending in a way that they cannot afford. But also, secondly, for banks to start withholding credit. And if you think our economy is in a bad place at the moment, wait until you start seeing credit liquidity drying up, because banks get hold of this and they fear for what is to come. And I'm concerned, DDG, as the Honourable Hugh Lewis had said, you know, the language. You know, when you say, you know, some of the measures for relief is for the minister to be informed by prevailing economic conditions. What exactly does that mean? What are those economic conditions? What are the regulations for the minister to determine a needy community? And for me, when I start to see language like that, that tells me that there is a populist approach to actually dealing with a problem that is quite serious. So we'll now start targeting communities, we'll start targeting provinces, we'll start targeting cities that actually have far bigger consequences than you might like to imagine. But also, you know, you use the example of student debt. So you're quite happy for students to pay back government money to the student lending scheme, and you say that they must pay back their money if they're in debt. But those people that have access debt and that are in debt can be written off. Why two sets of rules? Why for an ordinary consumer can they have their debt written off and they don't have to pay back any percentage or any form of credit, even if they are in employment and they still can't afford to pay that back? But then why do you make the distinction that a student should still then have to? For me, it's contradictory, and I'd like some explanation on that. But I think that if this document was to inform a policy paper and then a bill as it is, without any consultation, without any public comment from stakeholders, will be hugely problematic for the economy and for consumers.
Thank you very much, Honourable MacPherson. Let me just check. Right. Honourable Mantosh.
Thank you, Chairperson. In welcoming this presentation, Chair. Chairperson, I thought when we made this proposal in the committee last week, we were, you know, concerned about the retrenched miners and the steel workers. And this presentation, you know, presents to us that those people who are over indebted, that need this relief, are those people who have been, you know, exploited by reckless lending, in particular, as part of those who are going to be relieved. I am not sure if maybe I can be clarified. I'm not sure if we can liken it to NSFAS loans, because an NSFAS beneficiary is expected to pay when she or he is employed. And here we're talking about people who are hopeless, they're retrenched. A minor can, there's no prospect of a minor that you would get unemployment tomorrow. As far as I'm concerned, not unless I can be, you know, corrected. I'm thinking about those people, that the people, the block, that we, the lot that we need to concentrate on is the people, the retrenched, the people who have been, you know, I don't know the correct word to use, but the reckless lending that is practiced out there by loan extension. I have realized in my constituency, Chairperson, that the indigent people, these loan stores are extending loans to them, yet by definition, they are the poor of the poorest. These are the people that we are concerned about as a committee. We're not saying that we must give the minister powers to declare debt relief for each and every citizen of the country. I don't think that this is what this bill seeks to mean. Our intention was to look at the circumstances of those hopeless people whom we think we cannot be employed by tomorrow, the retrenched. The presentation itself highlights those that have been in the steel companies that closed down and the retrenched miners. By extension, it is reckless to extend a loan or a credit card or a shop card to a student who is not employed. For me, it is reckless. But you cannot liken it to NSFAS, because NSFAS expects a student to pay when she or he is employed after qualification, so that the next generation, you know, we must not use this fees must fall matter opportunistically. The two do not match. Thanks, Chief.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mantosh. Now, just so that some of you who were not here at the time,
sorry,
Honourable Hill Lewis.
May I just have a two finger on that?
Just 1 minute. You just switch.
All right. I think we'll just
get the technical people down before we really have a problem, but. If you can be heard, let's go ahead. If you are recorded,
no, Chair. I just want to repeat. I just want to repeat a point that I made last week, but I'll make it again. Every person who was retrenched in the steel and mining industry that had debt prior to being retrenched should have been covered by a credit life policy. If they were offered debt after they were retrenched, in other words, they did not have an income, that is a reckless loan. And there certainly there is scope to follow up and have those loans declared reckless. But everyone who had debt prior to being retrenched should have that debt essentially extinguished on their behalf via the credit life policy that was in place on that agreement. And if that is not happening, then you must ask once again, why are those credit providers not claiming against those policies for those clients?
I don't disagree with you, Honourable Hill Lewis, but you will recall yourself some of the discussions we've had in the previous term and in this term, when it became apparent to this committee that there was a certain amount of reckless lending going on. My broad use of that word would be when a retailer, as an example, sells you something. You say, yes, I'm earning 10,000 rand a month. I'm earning 20. They don't ask for proof. Now, that is a fact, as we know. Already we have cases going to court, I believe, to contest the issue of why should we ask for proof? And That is very clearly, I believe, in the act itself. You must check. Does someone earn this? You can't simply take it on the telephone or my word for it, etc. And in fact, I may be stretching it, but you're even asked for proof of residence when you enter into these agreements in electricity, this, that, or the next thing. And you're also asked for bank statements very often. But they are not all doing this on their own admission. So, you see, that's part of it. So you could argue, well, you know, you have bought this and you were dishonest about what you earned, you know, etc. There's two people involved here. There is that aspect to it as well. The other thing, as we also know, on record here and with proof provided, but a commitment to try and change the way business was carried out or business practice, and that is insurances are sold very often by the same entity. Now, so often when these insurances are taken out, it comes out in fine print, what we sort of colloquially call the fine print. Have you read the fine print? And many people, of course, don't. That doesn't make them less responsible. But the reality is that insurance would indeed cover the points that you have made. But what we learned is in practice what is happening in huge numbers is people have a genuine challenge, funeral, death, something changes quite significantly, and then they don't pay. Yes, they don't call you. The second month they may remember to say, look, I'm sorry, X died or I've lost my job, I'm going to sort something out. I believe that that insurance policy is valid for 6 months. You know, you have 6 months, apparently. I used to think it was 3 months, but I could be corrected. That you have the opportunity to go there and, as it were, claim on this insurance. We know that that isn't happening. Of course, it's my responsibility. But we are also here to operate in a fair manner and say, look, you were probably a bit overwhelmed. What can we do? The question to us then and to me today, why didn't that retailer pick up the phone to me? They very often pick up the phone and offer me more credit. Why not pick up the phone and say, you know, you do have this insurance policy. Wouldn't you like this to kick in now? This call doesn't happen. So while I agree with you, Honorable Hill Lewis, I'm still trying to answer some of these question marks. And I think you would agree that there are many question marks. No one wants irresponsible borrowing. But I would like to ask the DDG and the National Credit Regulator, the CEO, some of this, that, you know, when it comes to the issues we heard about 5 years ago, I think it was, Mashonisova, you know, and you said the debt in our country is just getting totally out of hand. This was a long time ago, 5-6 years. And you mentioned around mines in particular and factories, the mushrooming of such people. Now, what worries me when we're talking about debt forgiveness, the principle, is what do we do with such guys? I can go to a bank and say, now look here, you're a reputable organization. You know you didn't do X and Y. You need to come to the party. I can negotiate. How do I negotiate with these guys? So maybe just clarify the point of what I used to call illegal lenders. You know, they weren't registered. Perhaps you could just clarify that one for me. The other thing is, I was under the impression that people were still being asked for payment on debt 5 years later. Now, maybe you can clarify that, because one of our members indicated there was, at a point that was prescribed, etc. Just clarify that point for me as well. And the third point I would like to learn about is if I have borrowed 10,000 rand. Now, I get into difficulties, I let you know, and the interest starts to accumulate or whatever. And then something else happens, and you know, it gets worse. Now, finally, I get some sort of forgiveness. What is the practice? Is it to address the original amount, you know, 10,000, or is it to address the accumulation thereof as well? If we can hand over to you to address this for me, it would be very helpful for the committee members and their members for follow-ups, just so that you are aware. Let's hear what people are saying, you know, the NCR and the DDG. And when we've heard them, can we then come and I'll take follow-ups first? Is that okay? Right, thanks. Over to you, DDG.
No, thanks. We will be sharing the answering with the team. But if I may clarify in the presentation, the issue of student loan. Deliberately we said we are not dealing with the bigger picture that is happening now. We are saying there are students who get money from that fund, and that fund, for it to be sustainable, people who are working now, those students who benefited, we need them to repay. The Credit Act needs to be amended in order for follow-ups to say, please pay back. So when there is that issue of saying pay back, it will be unfair for the fund to demand, say in 100 rand, they take 98 rand, and I'm left with only 2 rand. So we are saying, please, let's do affordability assessment on the repayment, and then we request that you take out of 100 rand, you take only 25 rand. Only 25 rand. The 75 rand I'm left with as a student who is now working, repay, affordability assessment is done. So this issue also in the area of the Department of Justice, where they are amending their laws, is called the Supreme Court Laws Amendment Bill. We also work with them in that task team that we described previously to say this issue of creditors coming with these garnishee orders, it should not be more than 75 rand. It must be 1/4 is a quarter. Out of 100 rand, take only 25 rand. If there are many garnishee order, it should only be 1/4, 25 rand. You can share the 25 rand. I'm left with 75 rand. That's what we are talking about here. So I hope I clarified the issue of the sustainability of the fund. We are not in the bigger picture what is happening outside. No, we are not at that space. So I hope we clarified the issue. And then the issue of consultation. We are here for the bill. If the bill is approved to say we have certain clauses, we need to go and consult with the public. The public in particular are credit providers, and then my colleague this side will talk about initial consultation with the banks, what has been happening, what is the mood. She will clarify in that area. And then the issue of prescription, the way how I understand prescription is that we came here with a bill in 2013, the National Credit Amendment Act. We didn't We didn't repeal the Prescription Act of the Department of Justice. What we said is to say prescribed debt, if it is true that it is prescribed, it should be illegal in terms of, it should be a prohibited conduct in terms of this amended act, and therefore it may be begging a question: is it an enforcement issue with the NCR? Are there people who are collecting prescribed debt now that we are talking? If they are there, therefore it's a prohibited conduct, and therefore it should be the issue of refunding after you have been found that you are collecting the debt that has already prescribed. That is as far as I can talk to it. And now we are saying debt forgiveness. And if it stems from that conduct, we are saying something is wrong. Therefore, let's deal with this issue, negotiating, and then we forgive the debt, and then prescribed debt is already illegal in terms of the Credit Act, and then let's talk. And then the other issue of Honorable Koronhof, I think you were trying to tell us to say what are the changing circumstances. We are saying in the employment area, reckless lending is happening. We agree that there is an issue of credit life insurance, that we agree. But those people who are being retrenched, they were well-to-do of them, but they find themselves, the circumstances have changed. I gave an example of owing 10 rand after I have paid 90 rand. Why can't we start to negotiate and then you forgive me? And then that amount, because of changing circumstances, I won't be able to pay it under no circumstances. And then why can't we start to negotiate the 10 rand forgiveness? And then that's why we talk about the issue of writing off, to balance the two, to say, please look at the whole picture, in so much that when you forgive me, I won't be in a position to come with something to pay. So therefore, changing circumstances, we can come with a criteria, but there is a corresponding responsibility from the other side to say, giving students. Students are being given credit, and then we know that they don't have any income. Now we are in court. I will request my colleague Sipamanda to paint a scenario that we're dealing with. We are saying students don't have an income, and then we are being challenged why. We are saying we have the issue of verification of income. But the retailers are saying, no, we don't want to do verification of income. And therefore, we're challenging the department to say we should not be obligated to come with verification. And then we are saying it is true that prior you being given a loan and then post, Honorable Liu Huiwis, to say prior, probably people were not being verified that they have an income. And then this is the circumstances that we are painting, to say therefore, now that we are being taken to court, challenged, we are saying we would like those circumstances to be exposed. And then we look around and then we say, please, let's forgive these people. However, if you are giving a loan to a person who has got an income, and then later circumstances change after a lot of the debt has been depleted, please allow negotiation to take place? What is the criteria? We are also begging the question, but there is something that is not healthy in this area. I requested the chairperson that my colleague Sipamanda may paint a picture of where we are being challenged in court by the retailers to say verification should not take place. Whereas it is the law now that we're talking, as an example. So the rules of the tribunal, the rules are there. Maybe it's education and awareness that needs to take place of the practitioners in that environment, that rules have changed. This is the situation. I don't think we are going to change the rules, but we need to educate the practitioners in the area. So all in all is that the issue of Honorable McPherson is that consultation with the banks is taking place, but Ms. Motsekgari will paint a picture. What is the mood? And then can we go on with this issue of consulting with the banks? Are they doing debt forgiveness without using, again, the issue of, extinguishing the debt totally? She will describe the area. And then through your chair, my colleagues will also try to answer certain questions that I might have omitted. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, Honorable Members, and the Acting DDG. We have engaged with all the 4B banks, together with African Bank and Capitec, around the idea of debt relief, debt forgiveness. And I must point out that we were warmly received. However, I think we need to understand that we need to balance what Honorable Hill Lewis was talking about, you know, to make sure that we don't end up with a situation where we instill a culture of non-payment by a consumer simply because they will think, you know, if I take on credit and I don't pay it back, you know, government tomorrow will introduce, you know, another debt relief program. So the balance has to be there. There are banks in general, I think they've adopted their own debt relief, you know, somewhat in a number of ways. In our engagements with them, there are some who indicated that once somebody has gone under debt review, there are instances where sometimes the interest rates, you know, are reduced, sometimes even up to zero, where they see the person, you know, struggling. There are instances where when there's a sale of an asset and the property is auctioned and there's a shortfall, there are instances where they're even able to write off, you know, up to 50% of the outstanding balance. Where somebody has arrears in, you know, whilst they're under debt review, you know, they're able to continue to restructure, you know, to assist the person. So there are a number of measures that they have put in place to assist those struggling customers. They are, you know, some of the banks who are even prepared to go as far as putting aside a fund to assist those consumers, deserving consumers, I must add, that have had changed circumstances in their lives. To an extent where if it's a low cost housing, for instance, they're prepared to, you know, in auctioning that property to make sure that the outstanding balance is partly met, you know, by the banks where there's a shortfall. There are those who are also looking at, you know, for instance, making sure that in the case of students where the parents were provided a surety, and the student is not able to get, you know, a job after finishing their studies, they are prepared, you know, to write off that debt. So there are a number of ideas that have been you know, we have discussed with the banks. There are proposals that they have submitted to the NCR. We are busy going through those proposals. We are still awaiting proposals, you know, from other banks. Now, in terms of the retailers, we met with the retailers as a group, and they have suggested that we meet with them individually so that they can also, you know, come up with ideas in terms of what it is that they can do to assist those clients, you know, of theirs, you know, that are struggling to pay loans. So that is as far as our engagements with the credit providers, you know, has gone so far. But as I indicated, the willingness is there, even with the retailers, except that they wanted us to meet with them individually. We've already started, you know, those engagements with the retailers. Thank you. Can I ask some of our colleagues to perhaps respond to some of the questions that were raised? Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you to the chair and the committee members. My name is Pamandla Kumkani from the DTI. I'm responsible for credit law and policy. I would like to perhaps take a few questions and respond. In particular, in relation to Honorable Hilu's concerns around credit life insurance. Currently, we are working very hard to fix the abuses that are currently taking place in the credit life insurance. We might be saying that, you know, credit life insurance policies can be used to cover whatever circumstances that might arise. But the question is, the problem is that there are even consumers within the certain group of consumers that are not even aware that they have taken credit life insurance. And they, if by way of an example, I take a bond, I'm a minor, I take a bond of 250,000 for 10 years or 20 years. I had already paid the capital amount with some interest. I'm only left with 50,000. I get retrenched. I don't know if I have credit life insurance. The bank comes after me and they repossess the house. I have a family, I have a wife, I have kids. I lose everything. These are kind of consumers we're talking about. If I'm left with 10,000 from the amount that I've taken from the bank, why can't I can't be considered for a debt relief program? And that doesn't actually say that or promote, you know, illegal, you know, credit extension or lending to consumers. That's just by way of one of the examples. And in relation to, by the way, if we can fix the credit life insurance, perhaps I would entirely agree with you. But the problem is that we have not yet fixed it, and we need to fix it. And the time is against us in that space. Just on the verification of income, the retailers have taken the NCR and the Department of Trade and Industry to court to scrap Regulation 23A of the National Credit Amendment Act and its regulations in relation to the verification of income. The reason why we put that regulation there was to ensure that credit is accessible to everybody fairly and without any discriminatory activities. And to ensure that everybody gets access to credit, there should be verification of income, and we should know where you actually reside, and you should provide proof that you are in a position to pay the debt as it becomes due, and you should be able to service the loan. But what normally happens is that even 10 years ago, retailers have issued or granted loans to students, and those loans will be serviced through the monthly allowances, and students would fall into will default on those payments, and they would finish at school and look for jobs. When they look for jobs, they are already have impaired records. They can't get employment. They have bad records, and they can't actually pay back those debts. So this is something that is in court that we have already submitted all the documents in terms of defending the scrapping away of Regulation 23A of the National Credit Amendment Act. And with regard to the update around the credit life insurance regulation, we have agreed in principle, both departments, in terms of what should be the final product. And all the documents have been referred to the Minister of Finance a while ago. For the Minister of Finance, in terms of Section 106 sub 8 of the NCA, for the Minister of Finance to concur with the Minister of Trade and Industry in terms of the capped amounts in the credit life insurance regulations. So immediately we receive that concurrence from the Minister of Finance, we should then be able to publish those regulations as final regulations. But then the issue is we cannot preempt what would be the final version of the regulations until we have actually finally published it. But a lot of work has been done and it has been finalized. And the team has actually agreed from both from the National Treasury point of view and from the GTI point of view. So that we expect that process should be expedited so that we ensure that we deal with the abuse of credit life and cap those particular premiums of credit life insurance. And my colleagues perhaps will, if there's any other question that I haven't addressed, we'll deal with it.
Yes, DDG?
No, thanks. I think we tried to answer questions, but things are sort of still scattered. But we have indicated areas where we need to intervene by these examples that we're giving. Without preempting your summation of the whole thing, is that there are areas really that qualifies as circumstances that need to be dealt with by Parliament and by the Department, NCR, but we need that criteria. So that is my plea to say we should not be sent back picking, but we have issues that we have succeeded in saying really there is a problem. So that's all what I'm trying to plead.
Yes, do go ahead on. Just looking here, is that I'm just wondering now. It's not. Is that Mr. Kumkani? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Just one point that I forgot to address. I think is a point around the giving minister some powers to prescribe debt relief measures, as in when serious economic problems, you know, are sort of coming out. I think the issue is not to give the minister an absolute right to do as he pleases. I think the issue is that if you were to compare two situations, in 2013 and 14, we came up with the removal of adverse credit information under Section 71, but there's no empowering section. Then that would mean that whenever consumers feel under pressure economically, mind you, this is the NCA that has sort of shielded South Africa in 2008-2009. When U.S. and other big economies were crashing because of the global economic crisis. So what I'm trying to say, it would be a very expensive exercise for the minister when that comes to come to this parliament for over a period of 2 years just to ask for, to prescribe, you know, certain people should actually be getting debt relief. Because that would mean that we'll have to amend the law, and that will take us 2 to 3 years, as opposed to making an empowering provision or coming up with an empowering provision, of which the minister will have to consult before he even take that decision. So there shouldn't be an impression that by giving the minister the power to prescribe under the proposed bill, it would mean that the minister will just exercise that discretion without consulting with the industry. But the main reason is to ensure that we don't go back to Parliament and ask Parliament to amend the law, which will take around over 2 years whilst people are actually, you know, trapped in, you know, in debt. That's one point that I wanted to explain.
Thank you very much. Completed for the moment, because we do have a follow-up. I saw a hand. Yes, was it yours, Honourable Hill Lewis, to start with? Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable Alberts, Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Mantush, in that order. But just before you speak, one would like to welcome, I see here, having looked at the attendance register, we have a former Member of Parliament here with us, and also, I think, a former ambassador to Ireland, if I recall, and that's Melanie Fervoet. Thank you. You are very welcome wherever you are sitting. Has she already gone? Right. She was with us today. We always welcome former members of Parliament. We're also having with us, and I see she's just nipped out, is the chairperson of Health, Ms. Dunjwa, who's very interested in what's going on. Over to yourself, Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me just say up front that the some of the other requests for additional powers for the NCR, you know, I have vocally supported. I really want the NCR to have powers to initiate proactive investigations. The examples that you have used today are, I think, examples where those powers would be effective in dealing with those situations. I don't think, with respect to EDG, that those are examples that justify wide-ranging debt forgiveness. In the example that you raise, and I just want to respond to these individually, because I still, what really concerns me is that I still haven't heard a criteria of who exactly you are talking about. You've one or two examples, but those actually haven't been great examples, so I still don't know who we are talking about. So in the example that you raised of a person whose income was not verified under the Act, that is reckless credit. Now, that the Act already provides for that loan to be written down. So I support giving the NCR the power to do that, because I know your response will be, but yes, we can't get these things written down because the NCT doesn't work. And that's why I say I support the additional powers to give the NCR more powers in that regard. And perhaps we can, you know, they can go directly to the court themselves as the NCR, or indeed they can make the judgment themselves, and then if the credit provider is unhappy, they can take it on review. So I support those additional powers. But in the example that you've used, that is already provided for forgiving that debt, or forgiving in a sense, in the sense that you would apply to the NCT. In the Act in the example that you used, Mr. Sipomandla, the abuse of credit life is indeed absolutely rife and disgusting. I would say, though, that we have asked, that is why we have asked and pressed for the reform of credit life for 2 years now, and we are pleased that it is reaching a point of completion, or nearing a point of completion. But again, what I would support is the NCR having the power to go into that situation and say, here, you've retrenched all these workers, why haven't you claimed against those policies? That's not a reason for the minister to write off that debt, that is a reason to take very harsh action against those employers, those credit providers. Now, in the example, let's use the real life example that we are dealing with that Mrs. Mantashe has raised. We've got an area of the country devastated by tens of thousands of layoffs in the mining industry and in the steel industry around Funderbale Park. Now, what I would like to see is Ms. Mochikhare's team and Ms. Mashapa's team there on the ground saying, sorry, why are you still pursuing these former employees for the debt that they owe when they had a credit life agreement in place? And because you are doing that, here are the certain administrative fines that we can issue immediately and we can approach the court. All of those additional powers I support. What I'm saying is that neither of those two examples are a good enough reason to say, now we are going to take every person, an entire category of people, we don't know the individual circumstances, and we're going to say all of that debt is now forgiven. That is an extremely dangerous fire to play with. And I can tell you what's going to be the result. You are making a rod for your own back, because as soon as communities figure out that you have that power, in the same way, it is analogous somehow, just in some ways, to the protests we're seeing in South Africa today. As soon as communities figure out that you've got that power, they are going to be at your door every day to use that power to benefit them. So really, if you offered me that power, it's a power that no minister should ever want, because it is an absolute rod for your own back. I'm saying that we should seriously ramp up the powers that the NCR has, but unless I can see very specific criteria, DDG, of exactly who you are talking about, then I don't think that the generic examples that you've used today are adequate.
Thank you, Honourable Hill Lewis. Honourable Alberts.
I think there's some of my questions that haven't been answered relating to the National Consumer Tribunal's rules, what those changes will be, and how it will create a more of an informal platform to settle disputes. And also, secondly, the status of life credit regulations, where they stand at the moment. I might have missed it, but I don't think you've answered those questions. And I just want to say that we already...
I'm going to interrupt for a moment there, and do carry on afterwards, Honourable Alberts. I want us to specifically focus on the issue of debt forgiveness. There are other pieces of legislation in the pipeline, but back to yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, debt, writing off debt, as my colleague next to me has said, is quite a dangerous thing if you're going to take a group approach. You're also going to fall into a constitutional trap where one group of people get debt relief and other group of people do not. And there might be blurring of boundaries between the two groups, which makes things even more difficult to differentiate. What we have in place right now are very progressive laws that allows people who are over-indebted to steer themselves out of that position. And there are very strict rules regarding providing debt. So what we need to do is, there needs to be a very strong policing function when or over above the credit providers to have proper oversight. We must find a system that has a better oversight over credit providers in the first place, so that no reckless credit is granted in the first place. And secondly, if reckless credit has been granted, to take decisive action against those companies and institutions who's done that. And then also to take decisive, very firm action against debt collectors itself. There are a whole range of debt collector companies in South Africa, and I think this thing comes from the United States and from Canada, where people are being hounded and harassed for debt that is already prescribed. And most people don't know anything about the fact that there is such a thing as prescription of debt. So they do end up paying again after the 3 years. And that is something that needs to be looked at. If you look at the aggressive way, there's actually two aggressive functions in the market at the moment. Very aggressive debt extension to the public, and then very, very aggressive debt collection when they are not allowed to collect that debt anymore, and that needs to be policed properly. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Alberts. I think I saw your hand, Honourable MacPherson.
Thanks, Chair. I think we're still no clearer to understanding why this document is here when existing provisions exist to deal with people that can't pay for their debt. And I do hope at some point you will actually answer that question. The question that I'd asked you in the first round was, how would you describe prevailing economic conditions in your interpretation? Because I think when you say on slide 23 that the circumstances to be considered under such regulations may include but not limited to prevailing economic circumstances, I think it's really important that you defy now what you believe that to actually be. But I want to disagree with you when you say that there's no difference between the way that you look at student loans and the way that you look at ordinary debt. Because in fact the statement that you made, and I'll quote you, when you were talking about in ASFIS, was in order for the fund, and you were talking about that, to work, people must pay back the money that they owe. Well, DDG, the same applies to the credit market. In order for credit to work and to continue, it has to be paid back. You can't continue to withdraw credit and not pay it back, because the lenders of credit will just stop lending credit. I mean, it's a very basic understanding of how credit works, but the same principles apply to the way that you treat student loans and the way that the credit market should be treated. Because if you differentiate the two, I can't understand for what reason. Because you want to say that if someone has a job as a student, they can pay back. But if someone, has a job but can't afford the credit, well then it should just be written off. It doesn't make sense to me. A question I'd like to ask Ms. Moshogiri is, how many people in the first debt forgiveness window that took place are repeat offenders? So how many people that got debt forgiveness the first time are in exactly the same position? Because if there's a large percentage of the same people, well then I would think that they are actually delinquent debt faulters then. So you make a distinction between delinquent debtors that offer debt, but you don't make a distinction between delinquent creditors that keep getting credit and not paying it back. At some point you have to draw the line and say some people just simply aren't able, for whatever reason it is, to deal with access to continued credit, and they will continuously put themselves in that position. Is there such a category for people like that, ordinary consumers? And if not, why not?
Thank you, Honourable Mantosh.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am happy that the contributions that are made by members here for me are not meaning, Honourable Hillwis, that we're sending this department packing. But if I hear you well, you're saying you need firmer examples, which I'm happy about. Because I think if this bill that the committee proposes to put to table sees the light, Chairperson, we need to go out on a campaign of awareness to our communities, so that if they are forgiven, they don't fall back to the same position, after some time, as Honourable MacPherson is concerned. For me, there's no better example that has been presented here than that of a person who has paid 90% of his bond loan and is left with a 10% and is being retrenched, and the house is taken away from him or her without any reimbursement to him or her. And for me, that's the best example I can agree to. Because if you don't see that as the best example, it means you have a constituency that I don't know where it lives in South Africa. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, thank you very much. Members, to refresh your memories, and then we're going to take a short tea break. That is, just before we rose for the extended constituency period to accommodate the election drive, the committee had a formal presentation on this when it was mooted that we needed to look at debt forgiveness. But members raised several issues. One of them was the criteria. Are we going to have a blanket? How is this going to work? What do we do? And those issues we said we would look at on our return. Then we came back and the matter was raised again. We took simply a matter in principle to explore this, which is why we see the National Credit Regulator here, so that we are more aware of what is required. Having said that, I think there is a need to respond to the issues raised now, and then we are going for a tea break before we return. All right? So let me hand over to you, DDG. And in the meantime, I should have just noticed, I did acknowledge yourself, Chairperson of Health, Ms. Dunjua, Honourable Dunjua, in your absence, but I hadn't yet acknowledged Honourable Hope, who is the whip, I believe, of Social Development. Is that right? Thank you very much. Over to you.
No, thanks, Chairperson. We are talking about the criteria that we need to list. Whether the list is exhaustive, I don't know, but we tried to give three examples, but if they are not enough, we are prepared to go deeper. Maybe we can do it in writing and send it, but we are saying we have succeeded in painting the picture. And then the other issue that we may say concerning Honorable Albert, the issue of technicality at the tribunals. We have a host of tribunals within the DTI, include, say, economic development. Their purpose, when they were formed, was to obviate the issue of going to courts, technicality, legal costs taken by a certain profession, let's say the lawyers and the like. So we wanted to obviate that. But it seems as if dealing with consumer issues, we see on merit that there is an issue of reckless lending, as an example. When we're arguing those cases, we are so obsessed about technicalities. Have you filed this document? It may be an administrative. Have you filed the document? If the answer is no, everything collapses. And then what we wanted to achieve by this informal inquisitorial approach is defeated. So it's a problem to us. And we're saying maybe we need to revamp our original intentions about forming this issue of tribunals. We also have the Tribunal in Companies Act now. We are trying to move maybe to the CCMA approach, where whether you are represented by a lawyer or not, but the situation is that people are being, harassed in the area of labor, and then I have a lawyer or not lawyer. If I've got merits, I win the case. But here we are finding something to the contrary. I think that's what you are talking about. That's what we're talking about. And then we're saying we are going to address it. I may not have an answer now, but we are trying to really, all of us, to deal with this issue. May you allow me to stop here. Chairperson, thanks.
I think it's Ms. Machigari now coming in.
Correct, Honorable Chairperson. And Honorable McPherson asked a question around the issue of adverse consumer credit information that was removed in 2014. That was in, 2014. Adverse listings then started slowly going up. However, up to the end of June 2016, they have never been at the same level as they were prior to the removal of adverse credit, you know, information. Just to give an example, in September 2013, we were sitting at 14% adverse. December 15.4% adverse. As at March 2016, we were sitting at 10.1%, and now for June 2016, that figure of adverse was at 10.7. So it's never gone back to those levels. And this is not to say in these percentages, we still do have those habitual bad payers. But at the same time, and this is also illustrated by the cases that we've referred to the National Consumer Tribunal, we continue to have credit providers that extend loans recklessly. So it's a double whammy. It's not just because we continue to have those consumers that are habitual bad payers, but we still also have credit providers that continue to extend loans recklessly. And as I indicated, this is illustrated by the cases that we have, you know, referred to the National Consumer Tribunal. What is also pleasing about this is the fact that since the removal, those regulations, then the number of judgments has greatly reduced, and they continue to go down. And that's all I can say. Thank you.
Honourable McPherson, is this a follow-up?
Well, my first question hasn't been answered on the what are the prevailing economic conditions as defined by the
department. No, that's what I was going to refer her to. That's why I asked, is it a follow-up? There are two outstanding questions, which, if you would address that, and that's up to you. I see several hands going up, but I always like the principals to address things. Is it Mr. Komkani coming in at this moment?
Thank you, Chair. I think, let me just make an example. Currently, between 2008 and 2016, maybe 2008, the country was growing around about between 5 to 6%. But we're starting to go down to 3%, 2%. Now the economic growth is standing at 0.1, 0.2. And that would lead, firstly, to companies closing down, retrenchments. This is just some of the indicators that the economic situation is really not normal. I'll just stop there.
No, thank you very much, Mr. Komkani. DDG Netsi Tenzi.
Yeah, no, thanks. We said we have succeeded in painting a picture, maybe two examples or three. However, we are prepared to do in writing to give those criteria. Yes, that's what we said. So that issue of equating the students paying back and the others not, for us, we think we are saying the drivers of the economy generally are the workers. And then if those people are dampened, and then the students come up, but you take everything, 75%, but we're saying take only one quarter of what they earn. we think we are seeing the drivers of the economy should be alleviated of this burden and then go on. I think that is the story that we are telling. But we will provide the criteria succinctly, and then the three examples that we gave should be enough to say 90% have settled. And why can't I, if we need constitutional certification, I'm advising the parliament, if we need constitutional certification before this bill is signed off by the president, let's do it to say, is it doable? Because the parties have consulted and then agreed on a criteria. Is it doable? That's what we are pleading for. Thanks.
Members, because it's important that we take our tea break now, what I want to propose is this, is we're not finished with this issue. I know there are a couple of people who are still coming in on this, but what we want at this particular point, so that we make some progress on this, and I hasten to add, the student issue is extremely important. When this came up, the student issue wasn't there. You understand, you see. We were looking at this from a different point. So we don't want to sort of go backwards and forwards. Clearly we have to take account of current circumstances and so on. But I'm just reminding you where we were when we began to start what it is we wanted to do. So what I'd like to do is to go back to the point I made last Thursday. Was it last Thursday we met Honourable Hill Lewis when Ms. Mazzoni had joined us? It was Thursday, wasn't it? Is to take simply a position in principle. Now this is the position we want to try and take forward. In principle, that's all. Not a decision, a position. And that is, on Thursday we said, you know what? We do need to ring fence this issue. It is an important issue. Let us do a committee bill. That was where we were on Thursday. Now, I would simply like that endorsed again for us to explore. We're not taking it. We're still here and we're coming back. So can I have someone to propose us exploring this point for a committee bill? The issue of debt forgiveness, in inverted commas, some people may call it debt relief, but with criteria built in. And then we need to come back and see how do we set up this process, if that's where we want to go. So I'd like someone, that is what I've put on the table. Can I have someone to propose that, please? Honourable Mantash?
I'm proposing that, Chairperson.
Right. Is there any seconder on the principle to explore? Honourable Hill?
Last week, Thursday, we didn't mention the prospect of a committee bill. Why are we interested in a committee bill when the department is proposing amendments to the NCA?
No, we actually have asked them. Do you remember what you asked me on Thursday to do? You asked me to ask the National Credit Regulator to come here and ask her, tell her about the issues we wanted. So I asked them to please update the presentation of May that they'd given to us. I think it was in May of this year, if I'm not mistaken. I still have it somewhere here. But I'm almost certain it was then, because it was just before we rose, etc. And we were intending to go further with it, but we didn't quite get there. Was the 5th of March, 3rd, 5th, 2016, the 3rd of the 5th of May. Do you see? And that's where we came back to this quarter, can I rather put it, or after. So we're saying, no, there isn't legislation there. We're asking for it, and in line with the principle, I asked them to come and brief us and give us a further update to what they had already given us, debt forgiveness program, when we pointed out the high indebtedness in the country. Were there any measures we could take? They gave us, if you recall, a study that had been done in text form. Do you recall that? So that is where we are. So that is why I put on the table now, going from Thursday last week to today. Right, Honourable Hilde.
Chair, that wasn't my question. Sorry, why must the committee bill focus on debt forgiveness when there are the amendments that the DDG has proposed are much more important? Things like the power to initiate proactive investigations, search and seizure, the power to issue administrative fines, the power to hold directors accountable legally, are much more important than to enforcing the National Credit Act and improving and increasing the powers of the NCR than the debt forgiveness program, which is still extremely nebulous and undefined. We have not heard a single specific example where debt forgiveness could possibly work or be used. I don't understand why. That's why this comes out of the blue. There was no discussion of a committee bill. There's a discussion about an amendment bill to be brought by the department. The department must bring an amendment bill, and then we'll look at it properly, based with proper criteria and research on how all of those other powers will work, which I've already said, based on their description of it, I'm in full support of, and some proper criteria on debt forgiveness. But I don't understand why you're now lifting that issue out and saying this is going to be a committee bill and you must still bring your amendment bill. Why? I don't understand.
No, you will recall that last year, in fact not last year, 3 years ago. 3 years ago in the previous term, the issue came up. 3 years ago. So it's not a new issue. Let's just get that straight. However, yes, it did. However, earlier this year, before election, they were requesting a rather massive exercise, all right, which is some of the points that have been raised here today. And it is going to take them, as we learned then, all right, it is going to take them 18 months, 2 years. At that time, we said, then, you know, what about those that we do need to address, which you have referred to in terms of the study that was done, where in 7 countries, including New Zealand, Canada, United States, India, etc., a program which you've told us about specifically address debt forgiveness, sometimes called debt relief, sometimes called NINA. And it is that aspect that we heard, unfortunately he's not here today, he's ill, the Honourable Williams, raised that and said, why can't we just deal with this and explore that as a committee bill? Just deal with that. And that is where we were on Thursday and why we have the National Credit Regulator here today taking the matter forward. So what we are saying now is not that this will happen. What I have done as chair is to clarify the legal aspects of this. Hence, just now we'd be hearing from Advocate Prince to see exactly what is, you know, what is possible, what isn't possible. So we're not closing the debate. That's not what I'm saying. It is still open, but I am saying there's a need for us to carry on. It's either that or we go backwards and we say we never took a decision on Thursday. We never did. We did take a decision. We would explore this. But we have not actually, the first time since then, we have the National Credit Regulator, where we are hearing more. And there are many challenges coming out that you are identifying, do you understand? We haven't even deliberated on some of those issues. And they are not issues that you are raising that are unique or that are in isolation. Other members share your views. So I'm saying, where we are here to try and make some moves on this, because I do want to get onto the BRRR as well later this morning, is to say we want to continue to explore this. And let's hear about these issues. So So it's not a decision. I'm saying it's a position so that we can hear what the advocates are saying, so that we can hear what Mr. Hermans is saying. That's where we are. I hope I've made myself clear. All right? So we've had a proposal to continue to explore this before we develop a decision. Honourable MacPherson?
Then, Chair, to be honest, your language has changed within the last minute, or the last couple of minutes. Because where you started off with was saying that this committee is going to take a position to develop a committee bill. That was the first...
That was our decision, or position last week.
That is what you've said. You've now changed that to say that we're going to take a position to continue exploring this issue.
In this meeting.
So I just need to understand, what are you asking us to take a position on? To develop a committee bill, or to continue to explore and discuss this? Because those are two very different points that you put on the table now.
All right. On Thursday, we took a decision to have a committee bill. In principle. Yes, that is it. The committee is considering drafting legislation. So it is purely a consideration. So that's exactly where we are. We're endorsing that, and we have a proposal. So I think I'm going to go through the process now, so at least we can go for tea, we can come back and continue with this. It's not closed, the discussion. Do you understand? We're still continuing. So I made it very clear, and it's had a proposer already. So I asked for a seconder. If there are objections, you can say so. Can we have a seconder, please?
With respect, your language has changed. It's
right. On Thursday, the committee took a decision to consider drafting legislation on debt forgiveness. The legislation would involve the work and engagements with the NCR. We said we must bring this back this week, and I brought the NCR here to brief us a bit more. Today, what we are saying is simply this. I want to, before tea break, I've asked for the committee to remember what it said on Thursday, and for us to say at this point, we do need to explore. This is what we're saying here now, and I've used the word explore several times. Explore the decision to consider, should we go forward as a committee bill? We haven't taken that. We're going to explore that. So we're not saying right now, I want someone to propose we can't have a committee bill. Do you understand me? We are exploring this and getting information. Because I don't believe you can take a decision without that information. Am I correct? So we've had a proposer. Can we have a seconder? Right. Thank you, Honourable Quirinoff. Can we please adjourn for tea? Thank you. And back in 7 minutes, 10.